John's Gospel, and I encourage you today in your own homes, once you've eaten your wonderful lunches and had hospitality and shared friends with people, to read at least one of the Gospel accounts, and particularly if you turn to the last two chapters of John's Gospel, John's 20 and 21, and I think that'll help us focus in on a world where there are all sorts of distractions as to what Easter means for us as believers. It means very different things, of course, to those who do not believe. Just the first 18 verses. Early on Sunday morning, while it was still dark, Mary Magdalene went to the tomb and saw that the stone had been taken away from the entrance. She went running to Simon Peter and the other disciple whom Jesus loved and told them, "They have taken the Lord from the tomb, and we don't know where they have put him." Then Peter and the other disciple went to the tomb. The two of them were running, but the other disciple ran faster than Peter and reached the tomb first. And of course, John knew that. We assume it was John who's writing now. He bent over and saw the linen wrappings, but he did not go in. Behind him came Simon Peter, and he went straight into the tomb. He saw the linen wrappings lying there, and the cloth which had been round Jesus' head. It was not lying with the linen wrappings, but was rolled up by itself. Then the other disciple who had reached the tomb first also went in, and he saw and believed. They still did not understand the scripture which said that he must rise from death. Then the disciples went back home. Mary stood crying outside the tomb. While she was still crying, she bent over and looked in the tomb and saw two angels there dressed in white, sitting where the body of Jesus had been, one at the head and the other at the feet. I wonder if Peter and John perhaps just missed them. They didn't see the angels, they were really there all the time, or whether they just appeared. "Woman, why are you crying?" they asked her. She answered, "They have taken my Lord away, and I do not know where they have put him." Then she turned round and saw Jesus standing there, but she did not know that it was Jesus. "Woman, why are you crying?" Jesus asked her. "Who is it that you are looking for?" She thought he was the gardener, so she said to him, "If you took him away, sir, tell me where you've put him, and I will go and get him." Jesus said to her, "Mary." She turned round towards him and said in Hebrew, "Rabboni," that means teacher. "Do not hold on to me," Jesus told her, "because I have not yet gone back up to the Father. But go to my brothers and tell them that I am returning to him who is my Father and their Father, my God and their God." So Mary Magdalene went and told the disciples that she had seen the Lord and related to them what he had told her. And so the appearances go on. Amazing. Anne, could you do me a favour and get me a glass of water, please? Thank you very much. I'm missing Sandy. And the PowerPoint, please, Jim. Thank you. I've not got you, so I've got you now, I think. Our theme throughout this year is handing on the eternal flame, and we've been focusing in on and looked at evidence for Jesus being the only eternal flame. This is a year of outreach. Thanks very much indeed. Appreciate that. And during the 11 weeks that started last week, we are thinking about practical ways of actually reaching out. And we're thinking about the word hospitality, which in many ways is at the heart of outreach. And we're using that as an acronym, taking each of the letters in hospitality. Last week we thought about H and household and homes and humanity. And this week we're thinking about the letter O. And we're looking for very practical ways for every day in our life, but also particularly during the 17 days of the Olympics and the 12 days of the Paralympics, to reach out, to reach beyond the groups of people we know, and to leave behind us a legacy of people who know Jesus, who want to know more about Jesus, and so on. And today we focus in on the letter O, and in my mind I have a big picture of an open tomb. And I see that picture of openness as very central to driving us forward in our outreach. So imagine that open tomb and all that lies behind it. For some people, it was just an empty tomb with a few bits of cloth in it. For Mary, it was an awareness that something amazing and supernatural had happened. We don't know if Peter and John even saw the angels, but Mary saw them. Maybe they even missed that. Do you remember in the Old Testament when they say, open the eyes of their heart, well, mind, their body, to see the hosts that are around about? You know, there are even angels, I believe, here with us and around our building and into our hamlets. There are hosts, heavenly hosts, that we do not even see. Peter and John, some of the founding apostles of the church, did not even see the angels, maybe. We don't know. Have to be fair to them. But maybe they just missed them. But they were there. And maybe they chose to be seen. Spiritual things, unless they choose to be seen, are not seen, are they? God is spirit. Unless God chooses to be seen, he will not be seen. And that is what we believe. God chose to be seen, and so he came in Jesus Christ. So we speak about openness in hospitality, and we begin with this open tomb of Jesus. And the cross is not the only symbol to express what Jesus has done. And an open and an empty tomb is also a symbol, and perhaps it's actually a better symbol. Perhaps it depicts an even greater truth, or part of the truth, as it were. You can't do one without the other. It's not as easy to depict on pieces of jewellery, is it? Anglican Archbishop Rowan Williams will use his last Easter message. I expect he'll breathe a great sigh of relief. He must be going into a time of celebration now, I would think, and hoping maybe for an easier road. His last Easter message to affirm his belief that it is essentially Christian to believe in the historic resurrection of Jesus. I hope that he will state that the New Testament makes it plain that it was a bodily and not just a spiritual resurrection, as well as being historic. An open tomb displays to the world an open testimony or an open witness to the resurrection of Jesus. It is a symbol that he has been bodily raised from the dead. It is an open and a public witness, which is what is needed. And this message is not kept secret. It is for the public and for all. An open tomb will have to be explained to people the same way that Zoe has to explain, hear from her mum explanations of certain things. We need to explain it. An open tomb is an invitation from God to come and see what God has done. It's an invitation to come and believe and then to go and tell. It's an invitation, like an open door. It is an open tomb. And we are thinking about showing hospitality and offering welcome, food and shelter is central to demonstrating the love of God. We worship a God who is hospitable, who shows us what it is like to welcome strangers, because we were strangers to God and we were enemies to God, and he invited us to come and eat at his table. Our God is a hospitable God. We were once strangers. We were once enemies. And Christ died so that we might eat at God's table. And even in John 21, verse 12, after the resurrection, as he stands on the beach, Jesus says to his disciples, "Come and eat." And at the very heart of our worship is a table which shows us the hospitality of God, and that Jesus died so that we might eat at this table. We're not even dogs under the table. We eat at the table. One of the reasons I began to want to know more of the Christian message, as I've said, in my teens, was the way the Christians I knew demonstrated their practical community hospitality in their homes and their church buildings. I found it so attractive. I wanted to be a part of what was going on because it met this essential need that I have as a human being to be in community and to know God. God, who is hospitable and wants to share his very self, appeals to our human need. So you think, wow, you're playing into the hands of all the psychotherapists now that thinks people need an emotional prop. No, I'm playing into the hands of the greater truth that human beings were created to know God and live in fellowship with God. And if we don't, then we are broken and damaged. An open tomb is an invitation. Come and see. Come and believe. Go and tell. Hospitality is to do with loving strangers, not just loving those people who are like us. So in Hebrews 13, in the first verse, we're told that we must love our fellow Christians. But it's the second verse that reminds us to welcome strangers. And this is our current memory verse. So let's see how we do. Let's say together, remember to welcome strangers in your homes. There are some who did that and welcomed angels without knowing. Here come the angels again. And it comes from Hebrews 13, verse 2. Hebrews 13, verse 2. It is easier to welcome people who are like us. It is not as easy to welcome those strangers, those outsiders, those foreigners, those aliens, people who are different. During the Olympics, we're going to have a Wi-Fi cafe downstairs with good coffee and tea and also various cultural events. And then sometimes in the afternoon, we're having a pop-up cafe on the stairs, much simpler, and we are going to have some quiet space and other things on offer. And various names have been put forward for the cafe, some of which are really naff. Some people just want it called CAF. But probably the most popular one is called... Is that you, John? No, that was Chris, I think. Get connected. The idea not just of the Wi-Fi, but get connected with other people, get connected to God. You know, it might be not subtle enough. But the whole idea, of course, is talking with people and getting connected with them. Hospitality shown to strangers, not just in church buildings, though if we've got them, they can be a real advantage. They can be set in the public sphere and very useful. They can be bigger than our homes and so on. But through our homes, that's the exhortation, through our homes as well. And using our homes as well as church buildings is a major part of handing on and maintaining the eternal flame. I have suggested that it's my essential belief that failure to have open homes and to lead increasingly privatized lives has shut down the spread of the gospel in whole sections of the world. We have to go counterculture to what has become the norm in many, many parts of the world. And it is one of the reasons why the church in the UK and other places has slowed down and even stopped in its growth. It's a much more complex issue than that. There are many factors, but it is one factor, I think. We asked last week who comes into our houses, our homes, and of course the answers were very varied. Some of us have many people in our homes, almost too many, some of us not enough, and so on. But there are whole variety of households, and we shared that. In the day of Jesus, often it was not just a small family, but an extended family. Sometimes it was a live-work unit and so on. Then there were wealthy households, which also had servants and were large. And it's in those houses often, like the home of Gaius and others, that people met as churches and were hospitable. Even in those days, people would have said no, some of them. And so the home, for all of us, is incredibly important as we think about practical hospitality. Today is not the day, I believe, of new large stone cathedrals, but rather to build living communities of faith and open up our homes. That is where our efforts should be being put, whether to a few people or to many people. We talked about the whole variety of homes that there are, even in Bethany, where you have, for instance, two sisters and a brother. Today's city, in London, we've said that 34% of homes are single households. In some parts of the Scandinavian countries, 47% of homes are single homes. And for some, that is much more appealing for reasons that are being looked at. There's an amazing book called Going Solo. But society has changed. But whether we live in a single household, a house of multiple occupancy, or a standard family, and there are not too many of those, however we live, if we are Christian people, then hospitality and openness is incredibly important. Doesn't mean there are not rules that apply. Christians have learned over 2,000 years basic rules about running open households and so on, all right? But the principle is there of openness and hospitality. The church is on display. You do know that, don't you? The church is on display every time you leave your front door, and of course every time you invite someone into your home or someone visits you. The church is on display in the workplace. The church is not just on display on Sundays. The church is on display. People are looking at us, and Jesus told us the essential ingredient that will mark us out as those who follow Jesus. This is actually a good thing. Passing on the Christian message requires openness. And if you start to think about what the opposite of openness is, you can see the poles that there are. We are on display. Sometimes it's quite nice to batten down the hatches, isn't it? And to be in your own little nest. And, you know, that's perfectly all right and fine, I'm sure that that is. If you're getting a bit like me, you're just wondering if the cameras on the streets are also looking in at your windows. You know, we're in this strange surveillance culture, aren't we? But there you go. Openness. God himself is open with humanity. The message of the incarnation, as we said right at the beginning, is that God is spirit, and God openly came to show what he was like in Jesus Christ. Our God is a God of openness. And Jesus, after his resurrection, was making himself known. And we've talked about the various appearances that he made. So in verse 1 of 21, it says, after this, Jesus appeared once more to his disciples at Lake Tiberias. He was open. The open tomb moves into the openness, the revelation of Jesus. He wants to be seen. He wants to be known. And as we share the message of Jesus, we're looking for people to be open. The people that are sharing, that's you and me, but also we're looking for open hearts. We're asking people to be open with us, aren't we? Now, sometimes I think the way we share the Christian message is to put a lot of emotion upon people, and we ask them to almost bare their soul and to admit that they've done wrong when we hardly even know them. That's strange, isn't it? You know, really, we need to take time to get to know people so we can talk generally about the whole of humanity being fallen and broken. But when we start to get up close and personal to people, we really do need to know them, don't we? And we need to be open, and we're asking them to be open. In 2 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 2, Paul asks the Corinthians to open up their hearts to them. Be open to us. Make room in your hearts for us. So openness is not just for us, but we're actually calling people to a greater openness and honesty. And some people are amazingly honest with us. Passing on the message requires openness. Openness from us, and actually, if people are to receive it, openness on their part. There's a need for open and bold speech. Jesus was told by some of his disciples at one point, well, don't keep hidden because the world needs to know. And at another point, they're saying, hang on, Jesus, don't go to Jerusalem. If the world knows, they'll kill you. But as disciples of Jesus, we want the whole world to know of Jesus. And no one hides a light under a bucket, but they set it on a lampstand. We read in all the Gospels and Matthew 5 particularly. Whether we like it or not, whether we like to be discreet or not, we need to be open with the message. And whether we are shy or really up front, it doesn't matter, but we need to be open with the message, sharing that same message with those we make friends with and those colleagues we meet and others. Of course we're courteous and of course we're thoughtful, but we need this openness. Why do we keep so quiet about what we believe? Let's not do that. And some of you are better at being open than others. And some of us are learning not just to be up front, but to listen as well. We need open lives. Not that we can't have a personal element, but we do. But we need to be aware that we are open to scrutiny and people are watching us. We do need personal and quiet space. And of course, we need open discussion. You know, some cultures live their whole lives within touching distance of dozens, if not hundreds, of other people. If you'd lived in Nepal in the past, you may well have lived in a longhouse with maybe 100 people all the time there. Different cultures share their lives in different ways. In the 1950s, if you were poor and in East London, which was an awful lot of people, maybe a dozen people would have lived in two rooms. And that still happens in many parts of the world. We do need family space, we do need downtime, but also we need to be prepared to be open with our homes. Open to scrutiny. Who's eaten at your flat? Who's been asked that question just the last few weeks? You're quite right. Who has eaten at David Cameron's flat? Now some of you might think, well, how outrageous. How could we dare ask this man who's eaten at his flat? But of course, those who live in the public sphere have to give account for many, many more things. This has been an item for discussion in recent weeks. Now, the Tory webpage is open, that anyone can join in the donor clubs. Absolutely anybody is welcome. You see the clubs that are listed, and if you've got £50,000 a year, you can eat at the top table. And so it goes on. David Cameron is also clear. He regularly entertains his supporters. Of course he does. He's a politician. What is not clear is what favours or questions or honours are traded for money, whether you're David Cameron or Ed Miliband or the other one, spanning lots of tables. What is not clear there? But somehow such things seem to smack of secrecy, don't they, and patronage. And that must not be so for us as Christians. As those who follow Jesus, we always need to be careful about our motives for offering hospitality. And if we offer hospitality, it should be for hospitality's sake. And we're going to look at some of those scriptures in the weeks that come. In Luke 12, Jesus challenged the hypocrisy of the Pharisees that used their tables to gain things in life. Jesus challenged in Luke 13 people and said to them, just invite people, whether or not they invite you back or not. It is important what our motives are. We may be criticized for who we invite or eat with. Jesus was. The Queen is being criticized for inviting the King of Bahrain to her Diamond Jubilee celebrations, and she's such a nice lady, she said it would be rude not to invite him. There are quite a lot of people in Bahrain that might not be very happy that the King of Bahrain is invited. It's very difficult for those in public life. One of our governing principles is transparency. We will never have to make quite such hard decisions as perhaps the Queen does about such things. Some things done discreetly can be good, but think of the things done in secret. Think of Judas going off into the night to finish his betrayal of Jesus. Open-hearted, generous hospitality is what God shows, and we need to copy him in this. Maybe there are some people we cannot eat with because it does compromise our faith and our relationship with Jesus, but there are all sorts of people we can eat with. Reaching out even to strangers. God is reaching out through us to invite others to the wedding feast. Jesus is repeatedly telling us to go and invite all people to come to God's feast. And often that needs to be an invitation to our home, an open home and an open table. And today, if we hear God's word, then let us become hospitable, open people, and in our church, prepared to be hospitable and welcome strangers. It's that open tomb, that open invitation, I think, that should be in our minds, to come and to see and to begin to believe. Because the open tomb is an opening up of a holy, different understanding of the world and ourselves, understanding why Jesus died, coming to believe in his resurrection, and coming to believe that it is the power to change individual lives and the world as well. God has been open with us in sending Jesus Christ, and today we celebrate an open and an empty tomb, and we pray for that same openness that God has in the way we share with other people who don't yet know, for whom it is utterly strange what we do today. We're going to come around the communion table. I'd like Jeff just to run, or it's Jim, I think.